Hey everybody, it's Michael Martin. Thanks for being here. Happy Tuesday. So, you know, I'm thinking about the world that we live in and identifying risk. Risk is risk, right? And, you know, you have to think in terms of quantity and quality of risk. You also have to think about, you know, despite how wide you might cast the net, how much information can you uncover? You know, in the things that you do in your life, especially around managing risk in the markets, right? So I've been thinking about, you know, where are the blind spots in the crypto and blockchain spaces, right? Because cryptocurrency and blockchain can be different things if you really want to segment it. And I know someone listening probably knows a lot more about it than I do. But I think the point is that there are some things that I think folks are not paying attention to that, you know, when you start thinking about what's an exchange. And there's a couple of them out there that everyone would know. There's probably what, Gemini, then there's Coinbase and Kraken. But to my knowledge, none are actually registered with the SEC or the futures business as being registered brokers, dealers, or FCMs, right? So that's not there. And so what happens is all the regulatory component that would go with what it takes to be a broker-dealer probably doesn't exist. Now, I don't want to get into it here because it's not the nature of the show. I'm just trying to point out that there's a lot that has to evolve in that space for the market to become more mature. So you do get risk and return, right? If you start early and you lay your bets down, you're taking on a lot more risk than you might know, because it's not just the 25% daily vol that some of these things have. It's the whole industry. Now, I'm not saying the sky is falling by any stretch of the imagination, but to my knowledge, some of these places, they might be able to clear futures. That's a little different. But what's happening in the crypto and blockchain space, you know, what are those things? How are they defined? I know contain value, others do not. I think that's really a question of philosophy, though, because you can assign value to whatever you want. But from a regulatory standpoint, you know, what would happen if another Mt. Gox happened and someone made off with nine figures of worth, right? Because there is value there. Why else would it be stolen? So if you walk into, you know, a JP Morgan Chase or Wells Fargo, whatever your local bank is, I'm not recommending them, but I'm just giving you examples of them. And you're looking for commercial or retail banking, right, to pay your bills, savings, checking account, forget investments for the time being, because I know some of them are concurrently registered as other entities. You know, you have FDIC insurance, right? And that is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. It's really old, goes back to 33. So anytime you think about that period of time, you're thinking about the run on the banks, the effect of the crash in 29, and also the depression. So, you know, that was signed into law by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that insures deposits for folks who go in and put cash in. Now, coming out of the late 60s, the broker-dealer space was in a really bad spot as well. You know, markets were tough. And you had a lot of failed to deliver and a lot of failed to receive. If you don't know what that means, that's okay. You have to remember when you make a trade, you have settlement, right? And that's where clearing corporations come in. So someone wants to buy a stock, they got to put up the cash. The seller has to deliver the security. So none of that was really electronic at that point. It moved at a snail's pace. And so that had to evolve, the clearing of it. Then what we found was as a result, there was a lot of risk in the system. And what would happen if broker-dealers defaulted? So they made another act. I think it goes back to 1970, the Security Investor Protection Act, SIPA, which created concurrently the SIPC. So if you walk into any bank, you'll see something on the door that says FDIC deposits are insured by FDIC. And if you walk into any broker-dealer, I'm pretty sure it's on the front desk or on the front door, it'll say, you know, deposits are insured by SIPC from 1970. So you have basic balances that are insured against broker-dealer insolvency. It's not insurance or a hedge or a Greenspan put, nor is it a literal put, but it is. It does insure depositors against broker-dealer insolvency. So we don't really have that yet in the crypto space. So if someone commingles funds, or if they pull a John Corzine and otherwise, and the place goes belly up, you know, what recourse do you have? Probably not a lot. Nonetheless, that space is evolving, and it is what it is. But you just need to be aware that when you start to approach the things, you're also dealing with, okay, you might not know this, but broker-dealers, there's a lot of rules and regs that go on in the broker-dealer space that you might not know, right? You put the money in, you wire it in, you transfer it in, you make your buys and sells, the trade's clear, you make your money, you keep your losses small, you have stops and limits and market orders and all that kind of fun stuff. But what goes on behind the scenes is gigantic. There's a lot of operations, right? There's net capital, there's aggregate indebtedness, like all that stuff has to happen, and it's highly regulated. In fact, they have exams on it, right? There's, you know, if you're a member of New York Stock Exchange, you have to take the Series 9 and the 10. It used to be the 8. Now they broke it up into two tests because it was difficult to pass in one sitting, I guess. The people complained. It's basically a test on municipal bonds and that market as well as options. And they found that some folks might understand one and not the other, so they broke up the 8 to be the 9 and the 10. So if you failed one, you could just retake the one that you failed. Big extension of the Series 7. Then if you're in member NASD, you have the Series 24, which gets really more into this aggregate indebtedness to net capital requirements for first year firms. Are they clearing members? You know, do they hold client funds, or are they introducing brokers, this and that? I don't want to get into all of that right now. I know a lot about it. The whole point being is that that is noticeably absent in the crypto and blockchain space. So again, that means risk, and you need to get paid for that risk. So if you're an early adopter, right, because we are really in the where Adam meets, we're in the Garden of Eden right now in terms of crypto, right? It's still very early when you think about the space compared to, you know, the stock market or, you know, futures markets, where, you know, I think you can go back to the Board of Trade goes back to 1850, for example. Now, again, I'm not saying that the sky is falling, but if you're a fiduciary and you need to evaluate these risks and you're having discussions with clients, you know, you might want to bring this up just to have the conversation and say, look, we're at a very nascent stage with all these things, and there's risks, you know, that are being addressed as we speak, but who knows when stuff and when laws are going to get enacted. But we've learned enough from our history that you can expect that there is going to be a deluge of regulatory information that's going to come out and probably be put into requirements for some of these places to work. So again, just flashing yellow light. You know, if you're running your own money, at least now you know. If you're dealing with client funds, now you have a few more things that you can speak about in your dialogue. Because, you know, like for everybody, you got to make money, but you also have to protect your capital. And at least knowing that your money is safe when you go to bed at night because the institution that you're working with has it safeguarded is a big first step. That's all I have for you today. Hope you find it interesting. And thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.